This is White Sox Weekly, your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and a drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago.
Now, here's your host, Jeff Mellor.
Happy Saturday evening, White Sox Weekly, or as we're renaming it, Hottest Team in Baseball Weekly. How about that? Or Best Team in Baseball in the Second Half Weekly. White Sox are absolutely rolling, and they continued the hot baseball action last night with a victory over the Angels in Anaheim, and they are just absolutely demolishing opponents right now. It is certainly something that I think White Sox fans are a little bit, they're thrown off by. You don't quite know what to make of this because the White Sox are 9-4 right now since the All-Star break. And not just the fact that they're winning baseball games, but it's the fashion in which they're doing it. They're absolutely murdering the ball these days. And they're doing it with a lot of the younger players. And we'll get you caught up. If you missed it last night, of course, it was a late night in LA, so we'll get you caught up with some of the highlights here, and then I'll delve deeper into just how good the White Sox have been here in the second half. But last night's victory, I do want to mention, was the 41st of the season for the White Sox, and yes, if that number sounds somewhat familiar, it's because that matches the amount of victories the White Sox had all of last season in 162 games, and now through 110 games, the White Sox have matched that total. They certainly have an opportunity to best last year's mark by a significant margin. And you may roll your eyes and say, okay, big deal. But the truth is that if you're going to turn this franchise around, it was always going to be a Herculean task. And the fact that the White Sox now have plenty of opportunities to improve upon where they were at last year and maybe, you know, improve this record by 20, 25, maybe even 30 games if things continue to go well. I mean, that is really significant and I think encouraging for White Sox fans. As I mentioned, if you missed it, late night baseball, certainly you're forgiven because it was a Friday night. So maybe you missed how the White Sox got their 6-3 victory. Well, I'll catch you up right now. It started in the first. Shane Smith, who returned off of the injured list, dabbled with quite a few base runners. In fact, he loaded the bases early, and fortunately for him, Edgar Caro is behind the plates.
0-1, called strike, throw to third! Caro nails Neto! Rojas snuck in behind him. Oh, is that a game-changing moment?
Oh, man, you're
not
kidding.
That's the first out.
It was huge because it allowed Shane Smith to get through the first inning without allowing the run. It was the first out of the game for Shane Smith, and it really did seem to put him back in a spot where he was able to fight through it and get through the first inning unscathed. Now, Shane Smith, after that, looked pretty good for the most part, but sometimes you just need your teammates to pick you up in a moment like that as a pitcher, and when they can do that, it helps you refocus, and I think that's what happened a little bit for Shane Smith last night, and it allowed, and Edgar Caro's been a really nice defensive catcher. You know, he does a really good job of controlling the running game. There's been numerous pickoff plays throughout the season where even if he doesn't convert on them, he usually is very close. And so I think just having him behind the plate really is an added bonus for a lot of the White Sox younger pitchers. Andrew Benintendi, well, he did something to extend a streak that you'll hear right here.
Benintendi high and deep toward the corner and right. Way back there and gone. A home run for Andrew Benintendi. 1-0 Sox in the second.
So Benintendi's home run right there was the first of the game for the White Sox. Gave them a 1-0 lead, as you heard from Len there. And Benintendi's 14th homer of the season was the 11th straight game that the White Sox have homered in. And if you're going to have an offense that each and every day is going to be in the fight, you need the ability to hit some home runs. And that is exactly what has taken shape over the second half here. And again, 11 straight games with a home run for the White Sox. And that's part of the reason why, when you look at all the numbers in the second half here, they're leading a lot of baseball in a lot of different categories offensively. So having the ability to hit the long ball has certainly been a huge benefit for the White Sox. And it's not just Benintendi, as Lenin Sosa stepped up in the same inning.
Another 2-2. A swing and a blast. Deep left. And it's gone. Lenin Sosa with a towering shot. That's his 11th, and it's 2-0.
The 11th home run for Sosa is a career high, so each one that he adds on, he will be increasing his career high total. Sosa now hitting .282 on the season. The only thing you can quibble with for Lenin Sosa offensively is the fact that he could stand to walk a little bit more. He does have a .308 on base percentage, so as good as the average looks and the 11 home runs, the 43 RBIs, the .308 on base percentage still leaves a little bit to be desired. And I will continue to harp on this. Lenin Sosa defensively is always it's an interesting adventure when Lenin Sosa is making a play wherever he happens to be playing, although it seems to be limited to second base these days, as I think Will Venable has basically gone through numerous opportunities of allowing Lenin Sosa to play first base. And I think the White Sox in the past have figured out that neither third base or shortstop, where he dabbled in the minor leagues, neither of those are real options. So, and first base, it just seems to be too much of an issue. So it seems like Lenin Sosa, when he's playing, it's either going to be as the DH or second baseman. And I'm certainly much more comfortable with that these days. But again, he still will make the unforced error from time to time at second base. And that is the one thing he could certainly stand to improve. But offensively, in terms of a player who brings a bat to the field every day that you can be somewhat fearful of if you're the opposition, that is Lenin Sosa these days. Along with Colson Montgomery, who, my goodness, he admitted earlier this week that he has begun using the torpedo bat. He said he used it for the first time during the second game of the series against Tampa in Tampa at Steinbrenner Field. And in his first at-bat, he homered. And it has continued. And he mentioned he felt like he was locked in at that point because he had a great result, so he wanted to kind of ride it out. And we are still in the midst of one heck of a hot streak.
Sends a high fly ball out into deep center field. Joe Adell's going to watch it fly away. He's done it again. Colson Montgomery with his sixth of the year. And it's 4-2.
Yep, sixth of the year, which means it's obviously the sixth of his career, his major league career, and six home runs in the last nine games. Unbelievable the power that Colson Montgomery has tapped into. And at least, I guess maybe, because it was apparent that he had power in the minors, but the consistency with which he's been able to exhibit it is really the shocking thing to me. And I'm not going to say it's exclusively the torpedo bat, but Colson Montgomery discussed how working with the White Sox hitting coaches, they advised him. They said, listen, the way you swing with your longer levers, with your long arms, it certainly could be a good match for you to utilize the torpedo bat. And I would say that it seems to be working out. So we'll see how long it continues. But his sixth home run, and also, oh, by the way, he's got 19 RBIs. I believe he has the second most RBIs in the second half of the season since the All-Star break. So he is certainly on quite the roll. That gave the White Sox a 4-2 lead. The Angels scratched a run back with a sac fly to make it 4-3. And then in the bottom of the seventh, in what could have been a tide-turning play for the Angels with an opportunity to go ahead and tie this game up, Nolan Schoenwell singled, and Travis d'Arnaud was rounding third with the sure game-tying run, except for the fact that Gustavo Campero wasn't absolutely flying to third base.
Swing and a line drive base hit right field. D'Arnaud's going to be sent. Talkman's throw goes back towards second. The relay to third. They got him, and the run's not going to count. Run's not going to count. D'Arnaud did not cross home plate before the runner Campero thrown out at third.
It was huge, and you know, it's funny because Travis d'Arnaud thought that he was going to cross the plate and tie up the game. And, you know, great play by Mike Tauchman. Both Len and DJ noted it on the broadcast last night. Tauchman hit the cutoff man, and that allowed the White Sox to nail Campero at third base. And they did so in just the nick of time. The Angels actually challenged that play. And on the challenge, it was confirmed, indeed, that Travis d'Arnaud did not beat the runner being tagged out. And so right call there. And then what you love to see, the White Sox adding on with some insurance runs.
The pitch to Sosa is whacked out into right, a base hit. Robert around third's going to score, and it's 5-3.
And then in, that was the top of the eighth, and then in the top of the ninth, Josh Rojas came to the plate, and he decided that he wanted in on the home run fun as well.
3-2 is hit high in the air out into very deep right center field, and it is Adell, and it's gone. Adell ran out of room. Josh Rojas hits the fourth White Sox home run tonight. It's 6-3.
As I said, 11 straight games with a home run, and not just the fact that they're homering in each game, but the White Sox, as you heard, they hit four last night. Everybody, it seems, is getting in on the fun. In this 11 straight games where they've homered, the White Sox have actually hit 25 total home runs. It is the current longest active streak in Major League Baseball, and those 25 homers are the Sox most in an 11-game span since August 7th through the 17th, back in 2021, when they also hit 25 home runs. So they are absolutely crushing it, and hopefully they'll have an opportunity to go ahead and add on to that tonight as they will be opposing Kyle Hendricks, who Chicago fans are certainly very familiar with in this city. And Kyle Hendricks, certainly, as he is now at a bit of an advanced age for baseball starting pitchers, especially with somebody who lacks velocity. Kyle Hendricks certainly is prone to giving up the long ball. He's given up 18 so far this regular season in 106 and two-thirds innings pitched. So the White Sox certainly are set up to extend that streak tonight. So there you go, a recap of last night's win for the White Sox. They're ninth out of the All-Star break. Again, they're 9-4 as they started their six-game road trip. 6 games, 8 days, and they will have an off day on Monday, and then they will resume with 3 in Seattle Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and then they will be back at Wrigley Field taking on the Cleveland Guardians next weekend at Wrigley Field. Speaking of next weekend at Wrigley Field, Sox and Bulls fans, join us on Friday, August 8th for Bulls Night. Wear red, rep your favorite teams, and check out the City Connect crossover uniforms. Benny the Bull will be there, and with a specially priced ticket, you will receive a limited edition Derrick Rose bobblehead. Be sure to stay for post-game fireworks presented by Fanatics. To purchase tickets, visit WhiteSox.com/promos. All right, so you're all caught up on last night's late night action in LA, and you're probably all caught up on the trades that went down at the Major League Baseball trade deadline as well, including one very prominent name on the White Sox roster that was not moved. I personally am grateful that he was not just sent packing for a bag of balls. However, some folks around Major League Baseball apparently were left feeling frustrated. I'll share that with you coming up next, right here on White Sox Weekly. I'm Jeff Meller. This is the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Waddle and Sylvie, weekdays, 2:30 to 6:30, ESPN Chicago.
Jeff Meller back on White Sox Weekly as we are getting set for White Sox and Angels this evening. Pre-game coverage officially starts at 8:30. We'll have your first pitch at 9:07. But of course, it's White Sox Weekly, so it's like an extended pregame for you Sox fans. Hey students, it's easier than ever to get your friends together for a White Sox game. Sign up for student pass alerts and get exclusive access to lower level ticket offers. Text STUDENT to 244-769. Again, that's STUDENT to 244-769 to sign up, or visit WhiteSox.com /students for more information. All right. White Sox did not move Luis Robert at the trade deadline, despite the fact that there were lots of rumors circulating, and there have been since last trade deadline. And sure enough, Bob Nightingale of the USA Today hopped on foul territory yesterday and discussed some of the growing frustration around baseball with White Sox general manager Chris Getz.
Then with the White Sox, yeah, to go back to, you know, Luis Robert, just not trading him is a disaster. Should have got more for those guys. You know, you talk to GMs, they get frustrated dealing with Chris Getz too. So, they kind of stood pat. But I think the Robert thing, you know, they should have traded him in the winter for one. They had to trade him now. I don't think they can pick up that, you know, that option. I think it's stupid to throw another $20 million down the drain. If anybody thought he was any good, they would have, you know, they would have grabbed him. I mean, they were begging the Philadelphia Phillies to trade him and trade to him, and the Phillies had no interest. I mean, everybody sees the same thing. The guy rarely plays. I don't care how much talent you have. You know, Anthony Rendon's got talent too, but he's not playing, so what good is it?
All right, first of all, I thought that was an extremely low blow because Anthony Rendon has frequently referenced how he personally doesn't love the game of baseball. I will tell you, Luis Robert, even though he's struggled at times, has never exhibited in any way the type of player who doesn't love the game. Extremely talented, he has been injury prone, I understand it. But at the same time, Luis Robert is also affordable, whether or not you think it's extremely affordable because of the potential that he has, that's certainly up for debate. I think if you look at it, what the White Sox have with Luis Robert Jr. is a distressed asset. And everyone around baseball understands that as well. He's also got, as Bob Nightingale noted, a team option for next season at $20 million. If the White Sox want to pick up, they can and retain his services. And I will tell you, when he's out there, he's still a gold glove caliber center fielder at the very worst. If nothing else, you're getting gold glove caliber defense in center fielder. But we know that there's more than that. We know, by the way, that at the very least, Luis Robert Jr. absolutely destroys left-handed pitching. He has, again, a 961 OPS against lefties this year. So against lefties, you have a legit middle-of-the-order hitter with gold glove caliber center field defense. Against righties, that's certainly where he has struggled over the last couple of seasons. And I will tell you, he has admitted that he has difficulty picking up the slider against right-handed pitching. That is clearly his biggest hole in his swing. But again, you're still getting gold glove caliber defense. And with what the White Sox are doing as of late in the second half here, if nobody is stepping up and offering you something that you think is worthwhile, then you know what? Go ahead and let all the other general managers be frustrated. There's no reason that Chris Getz should just give Luis Robert Jr. away because other teams around baseball understand that potentially a change of scenery and a healthy Luis Robert Jr. at the very worst is again a gold glove caliber center fielder who has also stolen 28 bases. He's a threat on the base paths. He always runs hard. We've seen it time and time again where he's hustling down the line. I'll let you hear from Chris Getz later on in White Sox Weekly where he talks about why he wants Luis Robert Jr. back. It is a huge benefit for every one of the young pitchers in the White Sox rotation to have Luis Robert Jr. out playing center field and giving him the gold glove caliber defense that he does. And when he's actually seeing the ball well against right-handed pitching, you know what the potential is from Luis Robert Jr. Chris Getz said it in the offseason. He's an MVP caliber player. There's no denying that. We've seen it in 2023. Luis Robert Jr. hit 38 homers. He stole 20 bases. Again, gold glove defense for the White Sox and played 145 games. And he has, at times this year, shown glimmers of that. And especially since the start of the second half of the season, I can see why Chris Getz wasn't just going to accept any offer that was given to him by the Phillies or Mets. Part of the reason why I think those general managers were frustrated was because, yeah, they wanted to just steal Luis Robert Jr. for a song and have him potentially be unlocked down the stretch. But Chris Getz wasn't just going to give him away. I don't know if the White Sox are going to pick up Luis Robert Jr.'s option. I think it might be in the team's best interest to do so. But at the very least, even just having him on the roster, giving them this defense that he's giving them with this young pitching staff, figuring things out in the second half of the season, I think there's value to that. And if you weren't going to get back anything more than a dart throw as a prospect, I can understand why Chris Getz wasn't too excited about just letting Luis Robert go. That's the reality of the situation. And I think other GMs being frustrated shows you that they thought there was an opportunity there, a good buying opportunity, but they were disappointed that they couldn't just walk in and steal it. I think that's the reality of the situation. Let's pause 10 seconds for stations to identify themselves.
This is ESPN Chicago, home of the White Sox. WMVP WTBC HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
Jeff Meller back here on White Sox Weekly. Coming up next, Dan Plesac, who is calling games for CHSN on the road trip. He's sitting in for Steve Stone. He also got to see the White Sox on their previous road trip. He had that streak going with his shirt where he was not washing it while the White Sox were winning. Plesac's going to join me next. We'll ask him about the White Sox and this hot offense, the best in the league in the second half, this 9-4 baseball team, and some of the deals made at the trade deadline. I'll talk to Dan Plesac coming up next right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
It's simple. The ESPN Chicago app.
This was a no-doubter. Over the shrubbery here in straightaway center field at the Big A. This is where the big boys hit him. And at night, the ball doesn't travel all that well here in Anaheim. He knew it as soon as he hit it, too. This is about as straightaway as you're going to get.
That was the voice of Dan Plesac on CHSN last night, breaking down Colson Montgomery's sixth home run in his last nine games since he's instituted the use of that torpedo bat. Love when Dan Plesac's filling in for Steve Stone on CHSN because it gives us an excuse to call Dan Plesac up and pick his brain about what he's seeing with these red-hot White Sox these days as he's getting set for his broadcast in Anaheim, the Big A, tonight. Dan Plesac joins me here on White Sox Weekly. Danny, what's going on, man?
Man, I'll tell you what, it's been fun to watch. 9-4 post-All-Star break. Different vibe, different feel. I got here on the team bus about 45 minutes ago, walked through the clubhouse. It's upbeat. These young players have shot life into this. And I was a little concerned how the White Sox would react post-trade deadline, losing Adrian Hauser, losing Slater. But they didn't miss a beat. And I tell you what, they came out guns a-blazing last night. It's been fun to watch.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Dan Plesac joining me here on White Sox Weekly. Not to mention, so yeah, you're right. They're 9-4 since the All-Star break, tied for the best record in baseball. And, you know, I understand, Dan, you've been doing this long enough. I've been doing this long enough. Small sample sizes. You don't want to get too crazy with things. But, you know, it's been a long 18 months or so for White Sox fans. And in addition to now having this nice little run, they've also matched their season victory total from last year with 41. With, I mean, you know, think about it. Still 50-plus games to go here in the 2025 season. So, I mean, help White Sox fans put it into perspective a little bit. No matter what, like, we're looking at the very least, you know, probably a 10, 20, 25-game turnaround from where they were at last year.
Yeah, no question about it. I look at it this way. My first series, I met the team in New York at Citi Field against the Mets about 8 weeks ago, and it's just a different vibe here. And my message is this to White Sox fans. 2024 was a miserable experience for everybody, fans, the players, season ticket holders, you name it across the board. It was a bad time, but it's part of White Sox history. But I think when you look at this team right now, Chase Meidrov, Colson Montgomery, Edgar Caro, Brooks Baldwin, the young players here weren't part of what happened in 2024. And it's easy when things have gone as bad as they have for the White Sox to be doom and gloom and to be negative. But those players weren't part of the problem in 2024, but they are part of the solution moving forward. And I've had a chance to talk when I get to the ballpark with guys that you work in other organizations. I talked with Mark Gubiza, who does the TV here for the Angels. And, you know, and everybody says, wow, you know, what's going on with this team? And it's pretty simple. It's young players. that are playing better, that are getting experience. And make no doubt about it, getting Luis Robert back, he's been a different player post All-Star break. Mm-hmm. We saw that opening that Friday night after the All-Star break when he made that great catch in Pittsburgh and could steal bases. He could do a lot of things. And they desperately missed him in the lineup producing. And so you put on top of these young players that are getting a chance to play, they're getting a taste of what it's like, and they're winning games. And the best player on the team, Luis Robert, is starting to again carry the load. And even though, you know, last night you look at the box score, he had one hit, but he had a big stolen base that got into scoring position that led to a base hit that changed the lead from 3-2 to 4-2. And it's just been contributions up and down the order. And the middle part of the order, the bottom third has hit really well. Kyle Teals had some really big games the last week. And you look across the board, Jordan Leisure, I thought last night, faced five hitters, struck out four. There's a lot more positives going on right now. Now, are they going to win the division? Are they going to win 75 games? Probably not. But they're a hell of a lot better than they were 8 weeks ago, and they're light years ahead of where they wanted to be a year ago at this time.
Dan Plesac joining me here on White Sox Weekly as he's calling the White Sox game along with John Schriffen on CHSN tonight as he's in for Steve Stone on the road trip here. Danny, you mentioned, you know, all the young players, and you just brought up Luis Robert Jr. One thing, I just basically defended Chris Getz, and I'm not here to necessarily do that just because this is White Sox Weekly. If I'm, you know, there are times where I'm certainly critical of the front office, but there was some criticism from around baseball. I specifically played Bob Nightingale saying that general managers were frustrated by the fact that Chris Getz didn't just want to trade Luis Robert Jr. You mentioned, you know, all the good stuff that he brings. But defensively, I think at the very least, when you're dealing with a young starting rotation that the White Sox have, just having Luis Robert Jr. back there, if you're not hearing anything close to the return that you would potentially want to trade a guy who, with a history who we know when he's at his best, is an MVP, you know, whatever, you know, top 10 type player, you shouldn't just give him away. And, you know, the defense alone is very valuable to these young pitchers who are on the staff.
Listen, the last thing, you look at it this way, and from a fan's perspective and from a writer's perspective, everybody wants to see deals at the deadline, right? Mm-hmm. You have a player that had a really subpar first 3 months of the year, and do you want to give away that player for 10 cents on the dollar, who might turn out to be a good player the rest of this year and going into 2026? And I get it. And I know a lot of people on the north side of town were disappointed because they wanted to crack at Adrian Hauser and you know, at Luis Robert. Chris Getz isn't in the business of giving teams, you know, it's not Chris Getz's fault what's going on with the Mets, what's going on with the Cubs, what's going on with the Astros, and all the teams that were looking for help at the trading deadline. Chris Getz has an asset in Luis Robert that we all know he's a much better player than he played the first 3 months of the season. And you certainly don't want to give that guy away. And if this team is going to get better, and it's better right now than it was a month ago, this guy's going to be part of 2026. And hey, worst case scenario, he has a monster August and a monster September. Who knows? He may be able to do what he did with Garrett Crochet. He didn't like what he was getting at the trade deadline last year. Everybody in baseball was ripping Chris Getz for what he didn't do. Yeah. End up, he got a terrific package of players back. And I look at it this way. The White Sox and Chris Getz aren't in the market of making other teams better. He has to worry about the Chicago White Sox and where they're going right now and where they're going next year. And if Luis Robert is part of that plan, then I don't, you know, what the Mets, the Cubs, the Dodgers, the Astros, the Phillies were looking for, that's not Chris Getz's problem, and that's not the White Sox problem. That's their problem. They have a hole that they need to fill, and if they wanted to try to get him for 10 cents on the dollar, you have to pass and wait for something better. Or, best case scenario, he comes back, has a great 2 months, and has a big night at 2026, and we forget about the trade deadline. I mean, the trade deadline comes and it goes, and everybody wants to make headlines and get the right deal and the right package and be part of it, and you kind of feel when you're the fan base that nothing happens, you're wondering why, you know, why couldn't we get Luis Robert? Well, offer a package of players and maybe you could have gotten them. And Chris Getz, to his credit, didn't give into that temptation like he did last year with Garrett Crochet. If the right deal would have come around, he may have listened to it. It didn't, and he's part of the White Sox.
Yeah, and I certainly think there's value to, you know, being 9-4 here in the second half. You know, don't just dismiss that. The reality is that the last thing you want to do is a team that's playing well, you mentioned all these good young players, you don't want to kill the vibe for nothing just because you feel like you have to, you know, sell that guy off. That would have seemed foolish. And I think if anybody who watched what the, you know, Harrison Bader was traded for, or, you know, Ramon Laureano, a couple of, you know, center field type players who the teams that were in on Luis Robert, I doubt White Sox fans or people around baseball would have praised Chris Getzey if he would have let Luis Robert go for just that return. So it certainly doesn't make a whole lot of sense to just give him away. I think you're spot on with that, Dan. Dan Plesac joining me here on White Sox Weekly as we're getting set for game number 2 of 3 between the White Sox and Angels tonight. Dan, speaking of the trade deadline, what about just the volume of these shutdown closers that were moved and just where baseball's at? I mean, you're living in the wrong era, Danny, because if you were playing baseball as a potential closer, you would have been moved 3 times the way you close games out, because it's just a war of attrition in bullpens. What did you think of the Mets, the Phillies, the Padres, the Yankees all going big for relievers at the deadline?
Yeah, biggest winners were the Phillies, getting Duvall. Duran from the Minnesota Twins. Duran, his first appearance last night, picked up a save for the Phillies, picks the scoreless ninth inning. The Philadelphia Phillies season is going to start game one of the postseason like it did last year. Zach Leiter went 7 shutout innings against the Mets, and then that bullpen that had been so good all year let it down. The Phillies bullpen is going to be under a microscope. They definitely needed to make a change. I thought of all the teams and all the big-name players that moved, Duran was the biggest move to the Phillies. He closed a need that they had. They needed to get that ninth inning solidified, and I think Duran's going to do that. And it goes to show you how the lack of depth of starting pitching has made relievers more valuable than any other players at the trade deadline. I mean, every team across the board, even the Dodgers, they pitched more innings in the National League out of their bullpen, and you can't continue to play like that. And the relievers that have been good are going to get beat up and tired. And so you played well up to this point. There's still 2 months of baseball left to go. There's a lot of important baseball, and there are a lot of overworked relievers and overworked bullpens in a hole because starting pitching innings are down. I mean, to do what the White Sox did in 2005 when they won the whole thing, we'll never see that again, Jeff, in our lifetime, where you have 4 starters go into the 8th to 9th inning virtually every game. It almost has gotten to the point where if a starting pitcher goes through 6, you're like, wow, we got 6 innings out of that guy. And it's amazing that up until the last 3 or 4 years, the big things to go at the trade deadline were, 1, those ace starting pitchers, and 2, a big bat. And this year, everybody was chasing for the same thing, bullpen help, because the teams that are good, they've worked their bullpen hard to get where they're at, and they know they need reinforcements. And the teams that feel like they're in it have to add guys because their bullpens are depleted also.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Dan Plesac joining me here on White Sox Weekly for another couple minutes. Danny, also of note, I think, was all the big potential quote-unquote aces, and I'll put that in air quotes, who were rumored to be available: Joe Ryan, Mackenzie Gore, Sandy Alcantara, Edward Cabrero, Zach Gallen, even Dylan Cease. All those guys' names were floating around there as possibilities. None of them were moved. And to your point, I guess, what did you make of that? What was your reaction when not a single one of those aces was traded at the deadline on Thursday?
Well, if you want to base it on statistics, there was one good pitcher that if you're basing it on this year, that was Joe Ryan. Zach Gallen's had a very disappointing season, right? And you could go down the list of starting pitchers that thought were available. And outside of Joe Ryan, the price tag was so high that if you want to give up the farm and give up premier players for a guy walking around with an ERA in the mid-4s because last year he was good or 2 years he was good, to me, Joe Ryan, there are two guys that stuck out, Adrian Houser and Joe Ryan. Both of those guys have been solid all season long. I thought Houser, I thought he was just a huge shot in the arm. And credit the White Sox and Chris Getz for giving him a chance, giving a chance to start. That's what he wanted to do. And he had one subpar start. And other than that, the other 9 were brilliant. And Joe Ryan, in my opinion, he was just a man on a mountain. Like, if you're going recency, a guy that's throwing well, has been throwing well since April all the way up to this point, Joe Ryan was the best that was available on the market. And to the Twins' credit, I mean, they basically dismantled that whole team.
They did.
But they did hang on to Joe Ryan because they quite frankly felt that the package of pitchers or players they were going to get back wasn't like on par for what the industry was getting for pitchers that were of lesser value than Joe Ryan. They held firm, and you know what? They're going to have Joe Ryan. And listen, he's a controllable pitcher for the next couple of seasons. And going into next year for the Twins, it's going to be a totally remade roster. And they can also look into if they want to move Joe Ryan in the offseason at the winter meetings. There's going to be a lot of interest in Joe Ryan. So if that's the way that the Twins want to go, they'll get an opportunity to move Joe Ryan.
No, it's a great point when you consider they did a full-blown teardown in the Twins. I believe they moved 10 players at the deadline. And Joe Ryan, somebody who everyone thought was available, was one of the few who did not get traded. Dan Plesac joining me here on White Sox Weekly. What'd you make? You mentioned Adrian Hauser, so I'll bring it up. They get Curtis Meade, who at one point was one of the top prospects in all of baseball. It's interesting, baseball nowadays, you can't get, it seems like at the trade deadline, top 100 prospects, except A.J. Preller, basically, are not moved, period, end of story. They haven't been for the last few years. But it's interesting because, like, one of the most interesting players you might be able to obtain is a former top 100 prospect who, for whatever reason, maybe has gotten an opportunity, but not enough of an opportunity to actually show themselves in the majors. And that's what the White Sox landed in Curtis Meade from the Rays for Adrian Hauser, along with a couple of relievers in the minors. What'd you make of the return that Chris Getz was able to get for Adrian Hauser?
I thought it was a good move. I really did. Now, what were the chances that the White Sox were going to lock Adrian Hauser up to a long-term contract? He's going to be a free agent at the end of the season. And listen, he's pitched himself into a really nice contract. If you're Adrian Hauser, started the year in the minor leagues, White Sox took a flyer. He pitched really well. Chris Getz got a package of players back that he thought it was worth making the move for. And I'm sure he debated over that because that was the one constant that they had in the young rotation, that every 5 days you had a guy that you know could go out and navigate through six innings and save the bullpen and save some of that wear and tear. And so, and you like to have that, but the return was good enough. And you know, I give Chris Getz a lot of credit. He was not going to move Hauser Roberts unless he got a deal that he thought was fair value for what his players were. He felt like he got that from the Rays. Hey, listen, it's a good move for Adrian Hauser. Get a chance to go to a team that has somewhat of a chance to play. And he's got a chance for the next 2 months to build up his resume heading into the winter, into free agency, and the White Sox get three players back in return. So you move a guy, you take a shot, you give him a chance to start in the big leagues in Hauser, but you're able to move him for three players. You know what? And sometimes the best trades are the ones they take time to figure out how it's going to be. And maybe a year or two from now, we'll look at what this trade of Adrian Hauser, say, boy, Chris Getz, he made a great move and a brilliant move. And at worst case, Adrian Hauser gets a chance to go to a good team. He's going to get the chance to get the ball every 5 days and build up a good resume heading into the winter.
All right, Dan, I'm going to let you go here, but you have to fill me in because I'm working with Len and DJ, so I don't get to actually listen to you and John during the broadcast. Do you have a fresh, clean shirt on tonight, or have we started a new streak?
No, I can't wash this shirt. I wore it last night. It can't be washed until they lose, so I'm hoping that this thing stinks all the way till I get on a plane. I head back to New Jersey Sunday. I'm doing tonight's game and Sunday day game against the Angels. I'm heading back to my day job at MLB Network on Monday, but this thing won't be washed until they lose. When they lose, it goes in the washing machine.
All right, so that's the plan. Danny, as always, appreciate your time, man. We will I'm sure plenty of people out there will be watching tonight, and I will be checking back in after we do the radio broadcast tonight. Thanks for joining me here on White Sox Weekly.
You got to keep the hope. Things are getting better, and they're getting better fast here.
Agreed completely. That is Dan Plesac. Again, he's on CHSN. In for Stoney for the rest of this series against the Angels. White Sox fans, there's still time to win one-of-a-kind experiences this season. Enter the Ultimate Fan Sweepstakes for your chance to win a 2026 suite for a game. August's winner will receive a 20-person suite for a mutually agreed-upon game in 2026. Host your friends and family in luxury while cheering on the Sox. To enter, visit whitesox.com/sweepstakes. All right, we've talked a lot about the moves that Chris Getz did and chose not to make at the trade deadline. We'll let you hear from the White Sox general manager in his own words when we come back right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Cap and Jay Hood, Monday morning at 7, ESPN Chicago.
Jeff Miller back here on White Sox Weekly as the Sox and Angels will play game number 2 of 3 this evening. Len and DJ will be up a little bit before 9 o'clock tonight. We'll have your official pregame show starting at 8:30. But, of course, every Saturday, 2 hours prior to our pregame coverage, we give you White Sox Weekly. So it's essentially an extended pregame for you. White Sox fans, join us at the ballpark this Saturday, August 9th, for Bill Veeck Night, presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Bring your business home. The first 15,000 fans will receive a 1960 Bill Veeck bobblehead. And be sure to stay after the game for post-game fireworks. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/Veeck, V-E-E-C-K. Jeff Meller on White Sox Weekly. As I mentioned, we've been talking a lot about the trade deadline. Of course, the White Sox offloaded both Austin Slater and Adrian Hauser, but a lot of the conversation has been about the decision not to deal Luis Robert Jr. The White Sox have a team option available to them in the offseason if they'd like to pick it up to retain Luis Robert Jr.'s services. They certainly can do that at $20 million next season. There's also another team option for the following season. So Luis Robert Jr., if he continues to play well, I think that's something that the White Sox will certainly entertain, bringing back, again, a Gold Glove caliber center fielder at the age of 27, 28 years old. If he keeps hitting well, I think that's probably a no-brainer in the offseason. So we shall see how that plays out. But Chris Getz met the media on Thursday after the trade deadline and discussed some of the deals he chose to make and not to make.
Chris, did you feel like this was going to be a more active trade deadline? I mean, you made two moves in the last, I guess, 24 hours, right? 36 hours, whatever it is. But did you feel like it would be more active overall going into this period? For you, no. I'm talking about. Sorry.
Yeah, not really. You never know how things are going to unravel and unfold. Obviously, there's interest from other teams that is needed. We had a fair amount of players that were asked about in deals, but we felt it was best to certainly keep the players that were not traded, and there were opportunities to invest into this organization for the future in the trades that were made.
Hauser was Adrian Hauser was a great find for you guys. Obviously, he did tremendous for you in the 12 starts. Talk about the three guys, starting with Curtis Meade, that you got for him in this deal.
Sure, yes. Well, you know, I'd like to start with Adrian Hauser, and credit to him with his performance in a White Sox uniform. Underneath, you know, the performance, I'm really proud that we were able to identify, you know, some changes in what Adrian Hauser had been working on in his performance when he was in AAA with the Texas Rangers. And of course, being able to convert on signing him and bringing him in here with, you know, because he did have opportunities to go elsewhere. And then, you know, being able to provide the runway and, you know, more than anything, he deserves all the credit. But I was also very proud of us identifying him and being able to get as much as we did out of Adrian Hauser. And yeah, it was 12 starts. And to think that we were able to find three players that feel like we can be part of our Major League club in the near future. You know, that's pretty remarkable work overall, and certainly very grateful for what Adrian has done in a White Sox uniform. You know, starting with Curtis Meade, you know, he was a high profile player, top prospect for a while, thought very highly of, you know, throughout the industry, certainly of the Rays as well, had a lot of conversations about Curtis and, you know, what he's about and what he's been through. You know, he's not the first player that has had some major league, you know, struggles early on. He has been productive, but based on, you know, what he's done in the minor leagues, we feel like there's more in the tank. And, you know, we identified, you know, some things in his offensive game that we feel like we can, you know, try to tap into to get to make him, you know, a real impactful major league player, but really, really happy to get Curtis Meade. And, you know, he's got some versatility. He's played second base, third base, first base. It's not too dissimilar than the Miguel Vargas situation about a year ago when we made the deal to bring Vargas in, a high profile player that hadn't really translated or taken at the major league level. And, you know, through his continued development is now become, you know, a productive major league player. We feel like Curtis can do the same thing. We're going to get to work at AAA and see if there's opportunity at the major league level as time goes on here in the next 2 months. But most importantly, it's about the next 2 months of work going into the off season and seeing where we're at come spring training with Curtis. And in addition to Curtis, having Davitt and Peoples part of the deal, two arms that we feel like have a chance to help in multiple roles. You know, the when you look at Davitt, he's been starting at AAA. He'll do the same thing, you know, for us in Charlotte. And Peoples has a history of starting this year. He's been in the bullpen. We'll continue the bullpen route the remainder of, 2025. But he's got versatility and he can have some, he could be a starter in the future as well. So to be able to get three players for a pitcher that we've only had for, 12 starts, we feel really good about and excited to inject this type of talent into our system.
In keeping Luis around and throughout this process, how did your evaluation of Luis and what he's capable of going in the future maybe differ from, how you're seen and perceived across the league? Or as you saw other center fielders move today, did you kind of see some of the packages and think we wouldn't be comfortable moving Luis for something like that?
Yeah, I think it starts with Luis and how we feel about him. And you look at what he's done in the last month, the month or so, and he's impacting the game in so many different ways, which, speaks to the talent that he have. We believe in Luis Robert, and other teams have identified him as a guy that could help their club, and there was an effort to acquire him, but certainly it wasn't to the level in which we felt like, kind of met the mark for us to move on from a talent like Luis Robert. What he does defensively, offensively, what he's capable of doing, and certainly on the base pass. We just love Luis Robert. We do. And, we've got more time, and we just didn't feel like it made any sense for us. You see what he's done here recently and impacting our major league club, you look at, some of our young players that are beginning to thrive at the major league level. I think Luis is part of that. And that was part of the calculus with, maintaining, most of this roster was, having an environment for our young players to continue and have success at the major league level and going out every night really playing competitive baseball and winning some ball games against, teams that are in first place and leading divisions and are going to be playoff teams. So, we really value having Luis Robert being part of this. We do. Culturally and environmentally with what Will has done with the staff and the vibes throughout the clubhouse, that was part of the equation and who we were going to move and maintain here. So, Luis certainly, there was a lot of interest up until, the final minutes here. Obviously we didn't match up, but I'm really excited to have Luis Robert in the lineup come tomorrow.
Is making the decision to keep him, is that contingent upon picking up his option, or is that something you continue to evaluate over the course of the season?
Yeah, we anticipate him being here. We do. And if we felt otherwise, maybe we go a different course. We feel like we're continuing to strengthen the infrastructure on the hitting side. We're not quite there yet. We're going to continue to exhaust our efforts and establishing ourselves as a top hitting environment. That's a big part of this offseason in the coming years. And, we feel like Luis Robert's going to be a part of that and he's really going to benefit with, having the resources and the support that's needed. And most importantly, he's a talented player. You look at his elite bat speed, his elite foot speed. This is a player that we feel like has a lot of great days ahead of him.
And with me, do you plan on setting him at a specific position? Because I know he's moved around a lot with Tampa. Do you want that versatility, or do you feel like putting him at a spot would benefit him as far as stability?
In the beginning, we need to get an understanding of where he's most comfortable. He's played second and third base, and he has improved his defense. We look at, obviously the defensive metrics and, our scout evaluation. So he's continued to improve on that front. you know, I think second base and third base is in the near future with us in Charlotte and probably in the big leagues doing the same thing. That versatility is certainly valuable. Most importantly, though, we want to make sure that he's in a good place offensively to be as well-rounded player that he can be.
Chris, when you're talking about Robert and you're talking about resources, you know, right now $20 million would be about 30% of your payroll at this point in time. So are you expecting to have more resources available to you to go along with having to pick up a contract like Louis?
Well, you know, when I was referencing resources, it's you know, the support around him, whether it be you know, within the front office, the R&D program, the strength and conditioning, to information that's being delivered to the player. So it's not, you know, strictly related on just dollars. It's people, it's process. And so you know, we'll continue to have the conversations in regards to future payroll. You know, obviously Jerry and I will continue to dive into that further. And you know, we're open to adding to this team this offseason. So I expect to do that. But you know, the most valuable thing here is having Louis Robert part of the equation, part of our lineup on a regular basis, and we're excited about that.
Chris, had you decided about Louis even before coming in today, or was it your mind was open on it, you know, if the offers were met? It seems like you know, and I know you do. I know everyone there holds him in very high esteem, but where did it stand kind of like coming into today?
Yeah, we were open-minded, and you know, we'll remain open-minded as we when there's opportunities to what we feel like really move the needle in a transaction to help our major league club. So yeah, we went into the trade deadline willing to assess, you know, any concept, any offer, you know, so I it just didn't meet the mark. It didn't. And you know, that's okay, because we feel like there's more in the tank for Louis Robert, and we've witnessed it the last month and the impact that it can have on our major league club.
Thought a very honest answer from Chris Getz regarding Louis Robert Jr. and the interest in him at the trade deadline, and why the White Sox chose not to just move him for a return that they deemed was not up to par with what they were looking for if they were actually going to trade him away. There's more from Chris Getz I'll share with you here in a moment, but Sox fans, bring your family to the ballpark with a family pack presented by ExxonMobil. Starting at just $19, each family member gets one ticket, a hot dog, drink, bag of chips, cookie, and a souvenir 125th anniversary water bottle. That includes all fees. For tickets, visit whitesox.com/family. When we return here on White Sox Weekly, I'll let you hear the rest of Chris Getz after the trade deadline on Thursday. I'm Jeff Meller. This is the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Get weird with Waddle's World on ESPN Chicago.
Jeff Meller back on White Sox Weekly discussing the trade deadline. Of course, the White Sox dealt away Austin Slater to the Yankees for Gage Zeal. They also traded Adrian Hauser on Thursday afternoon to the Tampa Bay Rays in exchange for Curtis Meade, along with a couple of minor league pitchers who are probably destined to be relievers, but nevertheless, Davitt and Peoples, that's the last names on those relievers, along with Curtis Meade, who was once, for actually two seasons, a top 100 prospect across baseball. More from Chris Getz as he met the media on Thursday after the trade deadline had passed and talked about some of those deals.
Speaking of your major league club, you're 8-4 since the All-Star break. You've won 3 of 4 series. What's impressed you the most about the group coming out of the All-Star break?
Offensively, you know, it's really come alive in you know, a lot of that is Louis Robert. I believe that it has an influence throughout the lineup. There's more action, you know, on the base pass when you know he gets on base, and obviously he you know, there's different ways to get on base. He's taking his walks and he's you know, driving the baseball and wreaking havoc on the bases. And I think that has really helped, whether it be the Kyle Teals and the Caros and the Montgomerys, you know, more opportunities to drive in runs. You know, we're hitting the fastball better. That was a highly emphasized. I know Will's talked about that publicly. He really had been stressing it amongst our both staff and players, and the players have taken to it. So, you know, credit to Will and credit to our players. So, you know, hitting the fastball is really opened up the possibilities for us offensively, and we've been able to score more runs. So I'd say that stands out the most. There's been some really good pitching performances. You know, our bullpen has become, you know, much more reliable. And, you know, Grant Taylor's a big part of that reason. You know, we've been able to have pitchers settle into more roles that perhaps are more suitable for their skill set. So I think bullpen starters you know, our offense are to credit, but most, if I had to pick one thing that has jumped out post break is our offense.
Hey, Chris, what stands out to you about yesterday's deal with the Yankees?
You know, yesterday's deal with the Yankees, you know, with Austin Slater, you know, he's a veteran. He's been he is a pro. I mean, I've really enjoyed, you know, watching him go about his business, and he had a positive influence. You know, you know, with players on our roster, we had a mark that needed to be met. We were not highly motivated to move anyone, quite honestly. And we had a threshold, and, you know, to be able to get a pitching prospect like Zeal for Austin Slater, we felt like was well above the line and took advantage of that. You know, Zeal's a guy that he's in his first full season, was fourth rounder last year. We liked him in the draft. You know, when we did that deal, you know, multiple people from other organizations, you know, credited us for you know, finding Zeal in this trade. And, you know, we're excited to add him to our pitching group.
And, you know, now that the trade deadline's over, just what are some things that you're going to be looking forward to for the rest of the remainder of the regular season here?
Yeah, I can't wait to play tomorrow. You know, I in the last year and a half as general manager here, I've never been more excited to come into the ballpark. I know that, you know, you go into a game knowing that you got a chance to win. You know, there's a lot that goes into winning baseball games. We've got more pieces than we have in the past that can help us win ball games. And so, you know, these next 2 months, I think, are going to be, you know, exciting. You know, these young players that are performing well. I mean, performing at the major league level is very challenging. And you know, you look at Colson Montgomery and where things were not too long ago to what he's doing is remarkable. It really is. I can't say that I anticipated, you know, Colson doing what he's doing right now. I believed it in the future. I did. I've been, you know, very consistent in my belief in Colson Montgomery, just because of, I've been around the kid. As a farm director, I saw him early in his career, and, you know, obviously he's had some hiccups here, you know, recently in the last, you know, couple years. But when you witness what you witness at an early stage in someone's career, you know that it's in there. You do. And his temperament and you know, how he goes about his business and his skill set and how under control he is. And, you know, when I talked to him, you know, a couple months ago and just assured him that we're going to figure this out. We're going to do it together. We're going to figure this out. Just don't give up. And giving up was not an option. It wasn't. And that's when I knew we were going to be okay. So, you know, so stories like that. I mean, that's a unique one. And Colson is seemingly off and running right now. But you look at Kyle Teal and Edgar Caro, watching what they did yesterday. And, you know, we scratched Adrian Hauser yesterday and we're still coming out with a win. You know, that's not an easy thing to do. And that speaks to the roster that we have and the creativity of our staff. So, you know, just to go into games on a regular basis and knowing that, you know, we've got a chance to win that night. There's a pathway to win, and Will refers to it as a pathway to victory. That makes it a lot of fun.
Chris, so were you surprised there wasn't more traction for Michael Tauchman? And I know you're going to say, you know, that you're thrilled to be able to hold on to him because of the great influence and productivity he's given you. But was it at any point you thought you had a deal for him?
There was interest on Tauch. There was obviously not to the level in which we were you know, willing to make a trade. But there were multiple teams that reached out. We, you know, he's not on an expiring contract. Tauk has been, he's had a really, really good year. And he's been our most consistent bat. He really has. And, you know, alongside that, you know, his you know, the way he shows up on a daily basis and the way that he competes is really valuable to have around a clubhouse and in a lineup on a regular basis. So that is something that, you know, is should not be ignored and needed to be valued. And I value that. And now with that being said, he's not a guy that, you know, becomes a free agent at the end of the year. There's opportunity to bring him back. And so that certainly was part of the calculus as well.
Were you ever close with a deal with the Cubs? Obviously, they had some need for a guy like Hauser. Do you think any of those conversations were ever close?
Yeah, we continue to have those conversations up until about 30 minutes prior to the deadline. So there was sincere interest. I didn't feel like it was, you know, it wasn't above the Tampa Bay Rays offer. And so that's why we went the Tampa Bay route. But I will say we were pretty close on a deal. It just didn't get there.
I guess you kind of suggested it, but is talking kind of similar with Robert, where kind of keeping him is a little bit implies your intention to, you know, keep him next year. You know, obviously the rest of the year has to play out, but is that kind of, you know, the plan you're operating off of?
You know, our options are open with Tauk. You know, they are. I mean, you know, he's got value here and he's going to have value other places. And so to have to make, we didn't have to make that decision right now. We didn't. And yeah, certainly that's part of that was part of the equation, you know, alongside the fact that he's been a really productive player for us.
You mentioned the hitting infrastructure being such a big part of this. Like when you acquire someone like Mead, is how much is, you know, talking to Ryan Fuller involved about what the improvement plan would kind of be to untap some of the offensive potential there?
Yeah, Ryan's here in Chicago. He, you know, he's in the room with us, and you know, when we're talking offensive players, it doesn't go without Ryan Fuller's analysis and potential plan if there's an area that needs to be addressed, and that applies to Curtis Mead. You know, there's still work to be done there, and Ryan is aware, and we're going to attack that head on right out of the gate. But most importantly, we want to get to know Curtis Mead. It's not, you know, we want him to get comfortable in a new uniform, a new place, and you know, we want to support him like we try to support, you know, everyone. But that, yeah, Ryan Fuller is a big part of our analysis and acquisition team. And, you know, just like Brian Bannister is on the pitching front. So, you know, we're going to continue to build our hitting group. And, you know, Ryan's obviously the lead, and we feel really, really good about where this is headed.
How do you feel about where you stand on innings coverage down the stretch? Obviously, of Martin heading on a rehab assignment and Shane Smith coming back, but Hauser was somebody who had done this before and, you know, was going really deep in games with Smith, with Burke, with Maurer, and some young guys who haven't, you know, maybe you're managing their innings down the stretch. Do you think this current group can cover you, or do you anticipate, you know, other guys from AAA kind of being involved as far as how you cover innings the final 2 months?
You know, it's when you start talking about, you know, pitching and pitching coverage, you never want to say that you're comfortable with what you have because of the volatility that comes with pitching. We do feel like we're in a pretty good place. Are we going to tap into some pitchers in the minor leagues? It's likely it is. You know, we feel like we're in a pretty good spot. Yeah, losing Adrian Hauser and what he brings, you know, in the rotation is not easy to plug both the production and the innings. But to your point, where Martin Perez is going on a rehab, you know, and you know, certainly can be helpful down the final stretch. And then you look at Shane Smith, that's about to return, you know, in Anaheim. So. But we also know that we're probably going to tap into some players that we have in the minor leagues as well.
Hey, Chris, with some of the more than solid returns relievers got today in the trade market. How much interest did Grant Taylor engender and produce? And even at his nascent stage in his career, I imagine it was some interesting offers you got along the way.
Well, when you have a guy like Grant Taylor and what he is capable of doing and shown, it gets attention. You know, teams check in. There's always curiosity if a player is going to be available. You know, it's not a player going into the deadline that I said, you know what, let's try to move this guy. Like that just wasn't the case. It wasn't. Now you look at the rationality or perhaps even the irrationality of deals that are made for top end relievers. You know, it is fascinating. But most, you look at Grant Taylor and just getting his major league career started, and you know, we haven't closed the door on him being a future starter. We haven't. He's really settling in the bullpen. Clearly, we've used him in multiple roles, whether it be openers or close games or leverage moments. So you know, he's really allowed us to just have a bullpen that's, you know, really been, you know, become, you know, pretty solid for us here recently. But you do look around the league and you know, some of the transactions have made and it's entertaining. It is. But when it comes to Grant Taylor, we weren't going to move Grant Taylor.
Interesting. That was Chris Getz at the very end there. Talked a lot early on about Luis Robert Jr. and the White Sox propensity, or perhaps I guess maybe I should say it, their willingness to bring him back next season, and how they like having him on the roster, basically telling everybody on Thursday that Grant Taylor was not going to be traded. Interesting, though, when you consider what was being moved for high-end relievers, and I think Grant Taylor certainly, if you look at his stuff, that's kind of the reputation people are looking at him, even though it's only been a short time, less than, you know, a couple of months at the big league level. He certainly has the stuff that I think a lot of people believe will play as a back-end shutdown closer type. And with the White Sox having, you know, 6 years of control of Grant Taylor, you can certainly understand why they weren't overly excited about the possibility of trading him away. But I think it's fair to ask the question, should the White Sox have been a little more open to it, considering what teams were willing to trade away for those potential high-end relievers? Something I want to explore a little bit when we come back, and I'll let you hear from Len Casper as he joined Waddle and Sylvie on Friday ahead of the White Sox opener against the Angels on this road trip. Good conversation from Len and his thoughts on the trade deadline as well. Sox fans, join us at the ballpark next Sunday, August 10th, as the White Sox take on the Cleveland Guardians at 1:10. First 7,500 fans in attendance will receive a Southside Legend Ozzie Guillen bobblehead presented by United, Chicago's hometown airline. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. When we come back, we'll talk about some of the relievers that were dealt at the trade deadline right here on White Sox Weekly on the ESP 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Carmen and Yurko, now weekdays noon to 3.
Jeff Meller back on White Sox Weekly as we're getting set for White Sox and Angels game number 2. Sox took the opener last night 6-3. They send Aaron Civale to the mound tonight. He will be opposing Kyle Hendricks. Obviously, fans in the city of Chicago very familiar with Kyle Hendricks' work, as he was a key player on the Cubs in their 2016 World Series and for numerous years there in Chicago. He also, at this stage of his career, is somebody who you can certainly get to, as he's allowed 18 home runs. So should be a good opportunity for the White Sox to attempt and extend their current home run streak, which stands at 11 games. They'll try and make it 12 tonight against Hendricks, who has allowed 18 home runs on the season. So certainly a good opportunity to do that tonight. Quick lineup for you here before we let you hear from Len Casper as he joined Waddle and Sylvie yesterday. Mike Tauchman leads off, plays right field. Lenin Sosa hits second, plays second base. Andrew Benintendi, who homered just like Lenin Sosa did last night. Benintendi DHing and hitting third. Miguel Vargas cleans up and plays first base tonight. He leads the team. Benintendi actually pulled into the lead. Vargas second on the team with 13 home runs. Colson Montgomery, look out. Before you know it, he's going to catch everybody and pass him. He's got 6 home runs in his last 9 games. He's batting fifth. That's the highest he's hit in the lineup and playing shortstop. Luis Robert Jr. in center field batting sixth. Kyle Teal behind the plate hits seventh. Brooks Baldwin, the switch hitter in left field, hits eighth. And then Josh Rojas back in the lineup after his home run, manning the hot corner and batting ninth. When we come back, we'll let you hear Len Casper's discussion with Waddle and Sylvie right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Twitch, ESPN 1000 Chicago.
Jeff Meller back here on White Sox Weekly every Saturday, 2 hours prior to the White Sox pregame show. We do White Sox Weekly. Get you caught up with everything that you've missed throughout the week and also the season as well. By the way, if you're unaware, the White Sox now have 41 wins this season. That matches their win total from last year. And there's still 51 games remaining. Actually, 52. So 52 games remaining on the season for the White Sox to go ahead and best last year's total. Listen, if they go ahead and end up winning 50 more games, they might have a shot at the playoffs. So, I mean, listen, 50-2, that would be quite the run, especially when you consider they're 9-4 in the second half already. That would be 59-6. That'd be one hell of a second half. But the way they're hitting, who's going to stop them? Probably some teams. Nevertheless, though, it's just fun to be a White Sox fan these days. Len Casper joined. You know what? Real quick, before we get to Len Casper, let's pause 10 seconds to allow stations to identify themselves.
This is ESPN Chicago, home of the White Sox. WMVP WTBC HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
See, I almost distracted myself talking about a potential 60-win second half for the White Sox. Again, 60 wins in what would that be, 65 games? That'd be a little bit ridiculous, but nevertheless, a boy can dream. All right, Len Casper with Waddle and Sylvie. He joins them every Friday, and he dissected what the White Sox did and did not do at the trade deadline.
Len, how do you feel? First of all, like, were you surprised? I'm hearing from a lot of baseball people, and this is before we zoom in on the Sox. Were you surprised at the flurry of activity in Major League Baseball with all the arms that went?
No, and, you know, really, there was a lot of movement, but I think some of the blockbuster stuff, and there were a couple of big deals and teams that really sold or really bought, but I think some bigger names were expected to move. I was a little surprised Cleveland held on to Stephen Kwan. I understand why they did, but it sounded like they might be in more of a sell mode. I think the Twins, what they did was pretty unbelievable, and I saw it today. I think they called up 8 or 9 guys after trading 10 away in the last couple of days. Padres in go for it mode. Actually, the Angels team that we'll see tonight, they actually added a little bit as well. They're 4.5 games out of a wild card. So, you know, you kind of have 2/3 of the league feeling like they're still in it right now, and I think that's kind of the goal of those extra wild card spots.
Would you like, are you one of the guys who would like the trade deadline pushed back because there are so many teams who think they have a chance, and would that increase it, or do you like it the way it is?
Not only do I like it where it is, I might even move it up. You know, when I was a kid, I think in the 80s, the trade deadline was June 15th. And here's where I go with it. When we had the waiver deals in August, I kind of like roster integrity. I don't know how you guys feel, but when you play 162 and then you get to the playoffs, I just started to feel uncomfortable with certain teams in October having 8 to 10 to 12 guys who weren't even in their organization 6 weeks prior, right? So I kind of like the fact that we know now what each team's roster generally will look like come October 1st.
Len, specifically for the White Sox, were you surprised that only Hauser and Slater were dealt?
I guess maybe slightly surprised, but, you know, I know the next question will likely be about Luis Robert Jr. Not only was I not surprised that they didn't deal him, I'm personally very happy about it. I think Luis Robert Jr. has more value to the White Sox than the statistics would tell you. I think he really likes it here, and I think he wants to be here when this team is really good again, and everyone internally feels like that's going to be sooner than later. So I think Chris Getz had a very specific idea of what it would take to pry Robert off his hands, and nobody made that offer. And I think Chris and certainly the manager, they're all really happy that Robert will be here for the rest of the year, and I think well into next year.
And Len, you can make a strong case, can't you, that if Robert is healthy and does meet expectations because he has so much potential, that that the price that the White Sox pay for him and the team option is very reasonable.
I agree with that, and I also think we don't know, not only this year but last year, if some of the strain mentally of am I going to be here, am I not, might have affected his performance. Only he can answer that. And he's 27, guys. He's not 34, right? So the second you trade a guy like him, you're almost immediately trying to either develop or acquire a guy exactly like him, but maybe 4 or 5 years younger.
Len, I was very impressed with the White Sox, not only with just in general how they're playing since the All-Star break, but after winning game one against the Cubs, they lost the next two. They were still pretty good games. And then you're like, okay, is this going to cool them off then, losing the last two? And then they go out and they do what they did against the Phillies, and they looked great. Do you believe that this is a sustainable thing where they're going to play really good baseball to the end of the season?
Yes, I think the young nucleus, I love that the home runs came from Teal and Vargas and Montgomery and Carroll the other day to kind of boat race the Phillies late in that game. And I think looking ahead, and I don't know how Sox fans look at it, if you want to put some tangible goals on this here at the end of the year, obviously avoiding a 100-loss season would be near the top of the list. But I think a better way to look at it is to finish ahead of the Twins, right? The Twins, as I just said, they turned over nearly half their roster. And I think the White Sox are 8 or 9 games behind them, which is a lot of ground to make up. But if they continue to play like they're playing, and they're going to get, I think, 7 more shots at the Twins, I think finishing in fourth place would be a nice, realistic, but challenging goal for the Sox here in the last 2 months.
Yeah, it really would be great. And especially with how bad things got. You talk to Venable every day, Will Venable. How much of an impact do you believe he has made with the young players?
Enormous. One thing that he and I talk about is the roller coaster ride of a season, right? And I think that he understands just the process of how this is, where the results don't lead kind of the conversations. They have scheduled weekly and monthly meetings to kind of go over some of the things they want to fix. And I think that would happen if this team were 28 games over 500 as opposed to below. That's hugely important in baseball, to make sure that regardless of what the results are, there's a lot of stuff under the hood that we need to get better at. And I think he has really stuck to his guns in that regard, and his whole staff has as well. And I think you've seen some tangible improvements as a result of that, not only defensively, but now offensively, as they've started to really do some damage on the fastball, which was a big problem before the All-Star break.
Len, I know we've talked about Montgomery quite a bit over the last couple of weeks, but if I told you that for the month of July, he was going to have 5 home runs, drive in 18, and have an OPS of 826. What would you have told me back then?
I would have been surprised. The power has been really eye-opening. I don't know if he projects to be a 35 to 40 home run guy, but that's kind of what the small sample is telling us right now. I think for me, the biggest thing is just swing decisions. I don't feel like he chases a lot, has chased a lot less, I think, than maybe he even did in the minor leagues. And he just looks like a very confident guy. He's made some mistakes defensively, but I think that's part of this growth process. And the one thing that I always look for, guys, with the young players is when they make a mistake, especially a big one in a game, is that they don't repeat it. And I think that's one thing that we've seen this young group do, is kind of make their mistakes, get them out of the way, and then get better as a result.
Speaking of that, and maybe on the opposite side of that is Andrew Vaughn. The way, and why do you believe, Len, that he's in Milwaukee and he's doing well. Do you think this is just a major league player getting hot just like any other player? Or do you believe he felt free after everything he went through in a White Sox uniform?
I think, Sylvie, probably all of the above. I think sometimes you change a uniform and for whatever reason it just clicks. I think being sent down to AAA is something that at the time really hurt, but he probably would say that it was the thing that absolutely had to happen. So I'm sure there are a couple of adjustments he made. He's in a pretty good lineup in a winning situation there. And, you know, the newness of it, I think, probably helps. And I do think that sometimes you just could get really hot at the right time. And for him, you know, they're going to have some interesting decisions to make. I would assume he'll be on their roster the rest of the way. Even when Rhys Hoskins comes back, they'll probably find a way to keep Vaughn's bat in the lineup. And then just statistically, his chase rate is way down. I think it was in the mid-30s in terms of percentage with the White Sox, and it's like 22%. So he just seems to be not swinging at bad pitches, and when he's getting his pitch, he's doing a lot of damage on it. And I can also tell you internally, everybody to a man in this clubhouse is really happy for Vaughn. He was one of our favorite guys. He was a clubhouse leader. It stinks that it didn't work out here, but I think everyone's really happy with what he's done with his new team.
It's a great story, no doubt. Hey, Len, what do you think about the Reds and Braves playing in front of 85,000 at the Bristol Motor Speedway this weekend?
I think it's awesome, and I'm sure we've all talked in the past few years about my idea of, after the Field of Dreams game, really moving this around to different weird situations, and I think MLB has grabbed onto that. And, yeah, play a game in front of Mount Rushmore, right? Build a ballpark and go to Montana or Alaska, play at midnight, like whatever. I think it's really good for the league and really good for those fans in those markets that don't get to see big league baseball.
That's very cool. You're absolutely right. Len, great stuff. Enjoy the West Coast, okay?
Thanks, Len.
That was Len Casper with Waddle and Sylvie yesterday as he joins them weekly on Fridays. Usually around 5:30, can be a little bit, can change occasionally depending on the White Sox schedule. But usually he joins them around in the 5 o'clock hour, 5:30. I think it was 4:30 yesterday. But nevertheless, always great to re-listen to Len joining Waddle and Sylvie as they have great baseball conversations. He mentioned the Speedway Classic, which is occurring tonight but not quite taking place. They're currently in a rain delay, but I will tell you, I watched the introductions, and it was absolutely a great spectacle at Bristol Motorsports Speedway in Bristol, Tennessee. And it was just, it looked pretty darn cool. Now, they're in a rain delay right now. They have not started the game at all. But I will say, it looked like a great atmosphere to play a baseball game. We shall see if they can actually get it played today. I believe both teams are off tomorrow, so if for whatever reason they have to pick it up and play again tomorrow, that will be interesting. But again, the entire introductions was an absolute spectacle in a good way, so we shall see. I'll keep monitoring that and let you know if they do actually get it played tonight or if they get underway at all. I do want to talk a little bit more about Andrew Vaughn, his success in Milwaukee, and some of the trades that were made across Major League Baseball on Thursday, including a lot of those impact arms that Waddle and Sylvie touched on with Len Casper there. Hey, Sox fans, head to the ballpark next Monday, August 11th, as the White Sox take on the Detroit Tigers at 6:40 for Pokemon Go Night. Receive a limited edition co-branded Pokemon Go t-shirt when you purchase a specially priced ticket. Limited availability. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. I'm Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly. We'll bring you pregame coverage starting at 8:30 for White Sox and Angels, game number 2 of 3 on the 6-game, 8-day road trip that the White Sox are currently in the midst of. When we come back, we'll take a look at Andrew Vaughn and also talk about some of those impact arms that switched teams at the trade deadline right here on White Sox Weekly on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Instagram at ESPN_Chicago.
Jeff Meller back here on a late night edition of White Sox Weekly, latest one of the year so far, as White Sox are in LA to take on the Angels. And First pitch comes your way at 9:07. Pre-game coverage will officially start at 8:30, so just under 10 minutes from now. But we're wrapping up White Sox Weekly, which, as always, I like to call just extended White Sox pregame coverage for you here on your home of the White Sox, the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Sox fans, save all summer long with our summer savings section. Enjoy $20 weekday and $25 weekend select lower level tickets while supplies last. The summer savings section is presented by Wintrust. Different approach, better results. Includes fees. Some exclusions apply. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/section. All right, Len mentioned Andrew Vaughn having a renaissance with the Milwaukee Brewers. He was actually 1-for-5 today in their win. So he got cooled off a little bit, but man, he has been the reincarnation of Barry Bonds, even though Barry Bonds is not dead. Nevertheless, Andrew Vaughn, he's crushing it in Milwaukee. He's hitting .371 with a .431 on base, .726 slug. So in 18 games, Andrew Vaughn has an 1156 OPS. That is absurd. Six homers in those 18 games. He's driven in 24 runs. He's also scored 13 runs. He absolutely has remade his swing and has figured some things out. And I think a little bit of confidence goes a long way for a player that a lot of people in baseball believe would be somebody who, at the very least, would just roll out of bed and be able to hit at the major league level. And clearly, I think the confidence that he has gained in Milwaukee has certainly helped him unlock some things. And good for Andrew Vaughn. He always, I mean, I know White Sox fans are certainly disappointed that it did not work here, but he always was a good guy in the clubhouse. He was always working hard, and it was just unfortunate that, you know, he couldn't unlock things here in Chicago, because certainly a lot of people were rooting for him here, and it's unfortunate that he couldn't figure things out here, but nevertheless, I'm happy to see a good guy hopefully go on to have some success in Milwaukee. I did want to touch on the impact arms that were dealt at the trade deadline. I'll lead off with Mason Miller, because he's got 4 years of control left for the Padres and has been, you know, he touches well over triple digits. He's somebody who can hit 103 on the gun with regularity. The Padres added him to their pen, which already had Robert Suarez, who leads all of baseball in saves, I believe, with 31. He picked up his 31st the other day. So you've got those two. You've got Jeremiah Estrada. You just got a lot of really high-end relievers in the San Diego pen. The Mets added Ryan Helsley to Edwin Diaz at the end of their bullpen. So you've got another guy who hits triple digits with regularity, who has now entered the playoff race with the Mets. The Yankees added David Bednar, and interestingly enough, David Bednar and Jake Bird and Camilo Duvall, all relievers that the Yankees added to their bullpen. They all had a hand in a blow-up last night against the Marlins, as each reliever gave up at least two earned runs in the game that the Yankees blew to the Marlins last night. The Marlins also, by the way, picked up a 2-0 win on the Yankees today. And then you heard Len talk about, and Danny Plesac, who joined me earlier, talk about the Phillies adding Joan Duran to close out games for them. That's something that the Phillies have sorely been lacking, a legit lockdown reliever at the end of their pen. So I just found it interesting that the biggest moves made at the trade deadline weren't the starting pitchers that everybody was kind of seeking, as no real big-name starter was traded at the deadline. It was more about the impact arms at the end of games. And it's just interesting the way you look at baseball, the way it's played in the playoffs, and how a lot of teams kind of just, you know, shorten up the games now with their pens. And they figure, you know what? You lean on your starters for maybe 5-6 innings tops, and then you'll turn it over to these high impact relievers who could come in and shut you down. And if you can line them up 6, 7, 8, 9th inning and have 4 or 5 of them that you can just turn to, maybe that's the modern way of winning in baseball in the playoffs these days. That's going to do it for this edition of White Sox Weekly. I want to say thanks again to Dan Plesac for hopping on. Len Casper for joining Waddle and Sylvie, because we let you hear from him as well. I'm Jeff Meller. Thanks to Jake Santos and Brendan Riley for producing this White Sox Weekly. Stick around. White Sox pregame coverage starts in 4 minutes right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.